Welcome to the Ideal Network Radio Show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts Darlene Sartori and Peter Meagles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Ideal Network Radio Show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. The short version of the word ideal in Ideal Network stands for I do everything around life, love, liberty, and laughter. And there's much more. Thanks for listening in and share this with the people that are most important to you. Now on to our show with Darlene Sartori and Peter Meagles. Let's get started.
Hello everyone, Peter Meagles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. For some people that might be new listeners, you might be unfamiliar with my voice. My name is Peter Meagles. We started Building Fortunes Radio, I say, towards the tail end of 2012, beginning part of 2013. That means we've been doing this well over 10 years. And the reason why I started it is because I wanted to be able to have a microphone and a platform for things we wanted to say, when we could say whatever we wanted to say without having to worry about what we wanted to say, of course, with reason and, doing things decently and with ethics, like Darlene says many times, with grace, elegance, and ease. So we wanted to do that, and I was looking for some additional guest show hosts, and I called on Darlene. She had previously been a customer of ours but also became a friend as a result of the many conversations we had about many things related to business, politics, the environment, what's going on in each other's families. So I said, you know, you're the kind of person I'd love to have as a guest host. So we pick Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Central Time to do a radio show with Darlene. And sometimes we do it live, and sometimes life gets in the way and we do a replay. But almost all the times you'll be able to catch us live if you go to buildingfortunesradio.com/ideal-network or ideal. You'll be able to find the previous radio shows that we've done as well. So I know last week Darlene had some issues coming up. We were going on some issues as well over here, so it was appropriate to run a replay. In my instance, you know, in the circle of life, my Aunt Fran passed away, or she was in the process of it, on Wednesday. I think she passed away on Thursday. But the reality was it gives you a wonderful opportunity to be able to reflect on many things. She was 82. Unfortunately, she died of Parkinson's, or the complications related to Parkinson's. And that's a tough way to go. She was sick for a really long time. But she was a trooper. She didn't complain to anybody, but she kind of like became someone who kind of reserved herself to herself. So I was kind of going through that, and like I said, reflecting on a whole bunch of different things, logically, spiritually, all that stuff. And I can tell you a million stories about those types of issues as well. But we are here to talk about a lot of things, because I know Darlene is helping a lot of people as well at all different times in their life, whether it's birth or death and everything in between. So Darlene, thanks for being here on your own radio show.
Well, thank you, thank you. Well, this is one of those radio shows that I'm kind of, I'll always say, discombobulated as to what I would like to bring out and what I just like to leave out. So I'm like you are, you know, dealing with situations in our families, but sometimes when it hits home and it deals with your own health, and then it also deals with your own home, sometimes you just got to be brutally honest about some of the things that go on in your life so that you can let people know that sometimes life does throw you a whole lot of curveballs. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm not overly fond about playing sports, so I'm not a real good curveball catcher sometimes, but I seem to be getting better and better at it, and I seem to recover a little faster. But if we will flash back to a moment in history, we have gone through September 11th and recalling that day back in 2001. And the tragedy that hit our nation and was a real wake-up call for a lot of people to realize that, wow, we have enemies that would do this kind of damage and that would sacrifice their own lives to fly planes. into buildings, and how the brave souls on the one plane brought the plane down and sacrificed their lives to save whoever's lives might have been lost. That would have been a lot more. And there's a lot of brave people that died that day trying to save a lot of people. So it is one of those horrible, horrible events that happened in our nation. And it's really minor when you really look at the scope of how many people have died around this planet trying to save ourselves from the evil that has taken grip on this planet. And, you know, I'm going to have a birthday coming up the 5th of October, and that's going to mark my 79th year, the beginning on this planet. And I never thought when I was 6 years old that anything that I could even begin to have written a story about somebody's life or whatever. I would have never thought that I would have had a book that would have probably turned into many encyclopedias. I've had so many adventures in my life. And this is one of the reasons 9/11 is one of those wake-up calls that I had, like so many people, as to what in the world am I doing on this planet? What can I do about this? You know, I'm just, this is just beyond grasp of what one person can do. Well, that's when I began realizing that it's time for me to seriously think back and see what have I done on this planet, and what should I be doing? Because, you know, we're looking now back quite some number of years ago, and what is it that we could be doing that would have prevented this situation that happened on 9/11? And if nothing else, it has given us something to remember. So last week I was going to talk about some things that we could actually do about what's going on. Well, something happened Tuesday night. It was a very busy day on Tuesday, and I had appointments for my sister-in-law at Tulip Tree, and I'd done some things. It was a very, very busy day, very rewarding, just, you know, going about my days, helping the elders, helping people out here, doing the different things that need to be done. And, what I thought was a good day. Because remember, I was recovering still from 9/11 and making my notes and et cetera. So I got back on the horse and started doing what needed to be done on Tuesday. Well, late evening, Tuesday evening, I suddenly had an extreme pain in my intestines, and I suddenly realized that I was gushing internally blood. So I was having a GI bleed, a gastrointestinal bleed from my intestines. So my first thought was, okay, do I call for somebody to, you know, take me to the hospital? What should I do? Well, I kind of did my, you know, I'm a, you know, paramedic, so I know how to do all my vitals and doing all the things that need to be done. So I took care of myself for a few minutes and see how I'm going and et cetera. And it wasn't easing up, so I decided, well, I'd better get in the car and while I can, make myself to the ER. So I called my son. It was my youngest son, who lives on the way that I would go right past it. And I said, I told him what was going on. I said, I'm going to be driving past your house. I'm going to stop and we'll decide what to go from there, whether you should go ahead and take me in or what. Well, I decided by the time I got there that I was still strong enough that I wasn't having, you know, a real danger to the public, because that's the first thing. It's not what's important to me, is what could I do if I passed out and caused an accident or whatever. So I felt like I was only another 3 or 4 minutes from the hospital. So, and it's clear traffic going that way at that time of the evening. And so my son said, well, all right, Mom, but you know, just pull off the road and call 911 if you feel, you know, and I said, I will. And so I went ahead, went to the ER. And, of course, they did some tests and et cetera, and did CAT scans and et cetera, et cetera. And we do not have surgeons and et cetera at this hospital. We are what often is jokingly said a Band-Aid station, but we do have doctors that come here, but we don't have people on staff all the time, so they would have had to transport me to Evansville. And my blood count was sufficient to say, well, I don't need a blood transfusion. So we went through all those things that you normally go through and et cetera. And they wanted to go ahead and check me into the hospital. And, you know, I lay in there praying, what should I do? And I'm thinking of all the things that need to be taken care of. I have too many responsibilities. So I ended up looking at, you know, what was the level of bleeding and et cetera, what was the danger. And I said, well, the doctor really wanted me to stay. And I said, I just don't feel it. I said, I just feel like I've got to go home. And I've got to take care of at least making sure that the elders got their food for the mornings. I got to get things organized and et cetera, et cetera. I said, I'm not going to bleed to death in the next couple hours, am I? And he said, well, there's no guarantee. We don't know exactly what we're dealing with yet. So anyway, I had to make these tough decisions. And so I laid there for a little while longer. And he went to get, they wanted to go ahead and check me in. And that's what they were intending to do. And when he came back, I said, I'm sorry. I just have to check myself out. There's just too many things that I can't, I'm not prepared to leave. Well, you know, I could have said, well, I could have died, and that would have, they would have still had to make it through somehow. While I'm still alive, I've got some choices here. So I did make the choice to go home, and I had to go back each day for blood count to see what the situation was so that if it got critical. So I was doing what needed to be done, So to make a very, very long story short, the surgeon could not work me in until the surgeon that had done this procedure once before for me, when this had happened quite some number of years ago, I think it was 2017. And so I kind of knew what I was dealing with and et cetera. So I was able to get in to see my general practitioner. My primary physician, they say, I got in to see him on the 14th. Now, this happened on the 12th, the night of the morning of the 12th, late, just before midnight, so to speak, on the 13th. And that's the Wednesday, the 13th would have been, okay, 13th. Oh, well, I thought, well, that's not, at least it's not Friday the 13th. And so I kind of tried to find a little bit of humor in the situation. And so anyway, I started doing some of the things that needed to be taken care of just in case. I made extra food for the elders and did all the things that I could do to prep and get ready for in case I needed to go into surgery. That would be, you know, keeping me in for a period of time. So as I went through this process, I realized that there was something wrong on the 14th. I had after I talked to Brink and my Dr. Brink, and, you know, that was like 3:30 in the afternoon, and it was like 5:30 or so. I just, I was feeling better, but I was extremely weak. So I just, you know, have this feeling that something was keeping me bound. You know, you just have this, like, this feeling that something is wrong, but you can't put your finger on it. Well, Friday comes. And, of course, I mentioned that Wednesday I'd called and told Peter to do a rerun because I really wasn't ready to talk about whatever I might be dealing with. And because I suddenly realized I don't have enough emergency prep done here for all the people that I'm responsible for. I don't have enough backup. And remember, I'm coming from a military family and a military wife. I've always had that being prepared. And I suddenly realized I'm not prepared anymore. I've had so many things going on in my life that life is just spinning out of control. I'm thinking, wow, that's a great topic for the chaplain's course. Made my notes, okay? So I can make that on one of my notes here. So anyway, this is going to spiral into being something that's going to work to help us. So anyway, Friday morning I woke up and I was feeling just a little bit more concerned, let's say. But at the same time, I was feeling a little stronger. So I felt like, well, I'm going to get up and I'm going to get busy doing some of the things that I need to do to make sure that, necessary things are done and my notes are in place in case Tegan needs to find something, a little bit more organization on the computer and the things that are going on in the office, because we are scaling back on certain things and then scaling up on other things. And so, long about mid-morning, someone told me about a situation that went on in the lower level of my house here between himself and another person. And it had to do with one man selling drugs to another. Oh, really? 911, I told him, there is a drug deal that just went down in my lower level of my house. Please send an officer. And as to say, they responded quite quickly. Well, in the process, when they arrived here, one of the officers got out of the car and said, "Where's Seth?" And I said, "I didn't call you about Seth." And he says, "But we have a warrant for him." What? That incident happened a long, long time ago, and you didn't issue a warrant back then. Why are you issuing it now? He says, "Well, we just need to take care of this first." I says, "Well, okay." So they took care of getting him. The poor guy was still sound asleep. And they drug him out of his trailer and barefoot, no top, just fortunately a pair of long pants on, and cuffed him and put him in the car, in the police car. Then they turned to deal with the situation with the people. And so anyway, to make a very long kind of ordeal that went through this, I gave them permission, of course, to search my place. I said, "I have nothing to hide. I want to know." They brought the dog sniffing, and, I just sat there and watched this, watched them do what they were doing. So they ended up arresting one guy that was the one that was the one that was accused, because they did find stuff in his room. Okay. Now, the one thing that I ask on my property is, whatever you're doing in drugs or whatever, do it off my property. Do not, there are certain things that I do not have a real problem with, but you should be respectful of other people's properties. And especially when you're running a homeless shelter, and you are endangering a lot of people's lives. A lot of these people are already addicts who are trying their best to stay clean. This is why we call it the Addiction Zapper Program. Well, guess what? If you're running an Addiction Zapper Program, guess where you're going to find a lot of addicts? And if you're a dealer, wow, what a haven to get these people back on drugs. So these are the things that we have to figure out, how we are going to make choices in our life. So what that did is pointed out several things last week about not being prepared, not being able to identify evil so that you can avoid it. But this person who did the dealing is something that I've been helping for quite some number of years, and he's been doing so well. I still to this day do not know why he backslid, because he had a good job. I helped him buy a car. He was just doing really extremely well. He had just finished up the 25th of August to get out of jail, and had been working and getting out on the weekend, going to church, doing things. He just really had us fooled. Or maybe not. Maybe it was just something he slipped on. I don't know, because I haven't had a chance to talk with him yet. But do you know what that does to your heart when you see somebody that has been doing so well and has gone through so many ups and downs, and they just destroy their life again? It is traumatic for the individuals like myself. You know, I've gone through a lot of people who have backslid, but when they do something in your own home, and you opened your home because you've had to close the homeless shelters because there is no management for them. People just do not want to help other people anymore because of this kind of a situation. Well, how dare this individual disrespect me after all that I've done for him and all that his father's done for him? And his father said, never again, never again. I want nothing to do with him ever again. Do you know how hard that hurts my heart to hear a father having to say, no, I can't. I just can't do it. He's gone in and out, and nobody. And we had such high hopes because he was doing so well. What knocks people off the, etc. So this is one of those situations where I'm not sure what will happen. They took him on with no bond. His call, it was set was yesterday, and they put a $10,000 bond on him. I doubt that, you know, anybody, of course, is going to post it, of course. And I don't know what's going to happen, but he's looking now, not only all of his stuff in the past has been petty stuff, you know, and he'll do a year here, a year there, whatever, off of petty stuff, you know, shoplifting and doing things like this. It's just been petty stuff in many ways. But he's looking at a long-term jail sentence now for something that is so, so, to me, not soul-satisfying. So those were the things that I wanted to put on a recording so that I know when this happened, so that as I go back and document, I can say I know exactly who this person was. And today I had court for two other people that are, one was an eviction that we had done from one of the houses in town, and I was following up on that. Well, they owe us over $9,000 that, but you know, I told the judge, I said, it's just not worth it. These people and me having to sit here in the court and going through all this, they've moved and they promised not to come back into the county and not to do et cetera, et cetera. I said, they are doing pretty good. And I know her sister is dying from cancer. And she was a long-term friend and still is a long-term friend. I don't want to put this on her, burden on her. Her sister's had her challenges. And so let's just dismiss the case. They're out of the house. They're gone. And they promised to never come back in this county again. So that was good. And the other person actually is going to be, it'll be another in October before he has to go back. So he's still out on bail. And so I'm dealing with a lot of people who have a lot of legal issues. And there's just not a lot of information out there on how people to not repeat. And this is why it's so important for us to work on this chaplain's course. And so I can only say that I know I have to be doing something really, really, really right, because evil would no way come after me in this way. And oh, by the way, the good news is I did a healing session. And I did get some a new healing wand that had been ordered, and for if it had come in earlier, probably maybe the bleeding wouldn't happen. But on Sunday morning, after healing sessions and et cetera with several people, I woke up not bleeding anymore. So I'm just absolutely know that I still have to have it, you know, procedure to find out exactly what was causing it, and et cetera, which is scheduled for next Tuesday. Feeling like that I'm feeling stronger. I'm feeling much more hopeful. And so I'm very, very pleased that I have this, what we call the inner spirit, the inner Holy Spirit that guides us and helps us. And if I have the time, I think I've ran out of time, but I think I'm going to end this with a song. If I can, hadn't thought about this, but I think I'm going to see if I can quickly find. Okay, this is Elvis Presley singing "One Pair of Hands." Let's see if it goes on. Might take me a little bit to bring it up. I should have done this. I hadn't thought about it. Oh, come on. I don't know why it's not starting. Oh, I know what it is. I did it the other day. I've got it hooked into my... Let's see.
One for the on the mountains, one pair of hands on the sea, one pair of hands made the sun and moon, every bird, every flower, every tree, one pair of hands on the valley, the ocean, the rivers, and the sand. Those hands are so strong, so when life goes wrong, put your faith into one pair of hands. One pair of hands heal the sick. One pair of hands raise the dead. One pair of hands calm the raging storm. And thousands of people were fed. One pair of hands said, "I love you." And those hands were nailed to a tree. Those hands are so strong, so when the light goes low, put your face into one hand. Thank you.
Wow, is that the way to end right on the 30 minutes?
Yeah, there you go. Well,
so
great
I hope
stuff.
That wasn't
Make sure
too loud. I hope it didn't come through, but that's what you do. Is you have to have strength, yet put your hands somewhere into somebody else's hands sometimes. So I'm hoping I'm there for those who can be, for those who I couldn't help that failed in some way, their own self. All we can do is pray for them. So back to you, Peter.
Okay, well, thanks for the personal stories of, first of all, I hope your health gets better sooner and quicker and all that sort of stuff. And you'll have to share with us some of the details of those healing sessions that you referenced. And then, you know, it's a shame of the recurrences of the people and the drug habits, but that's part of the whole thing. So
yeah.
We'll be back next week on Building Fortunes Radio. I'll title it appropriately, and we'll catch everybody next week. Thanks, Darlene. Thanks for being here.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Ideal Network Radio Show on buildingfortunesradio.com. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear more segments with Darlene Sartori and Peter Meagle. Darlene encourages everyone to join the Ideal Network so you can say, I live the ideal life, where I do everything around life, love, liberty, and laughter. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Darlene, Peter, and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to spread the word. Tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.